The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me? How are you doing, Kevin? Okay. I'm Mary Chris Rowe. This is Katie Ferber. We're from the Geneva School in Winter Park, and we're so glad that you joined us today for our Teaching Math with Joy. Hope you liked our funny slideshow. Now you know why we passed out math medicine, because not everybody is joyful about math. In fact, some people can get really tense, and they're often our students. So math medicine is something that we'll talk about later on, but we're glad you could join us, and our goal today is to just spend time talking with each other, encouraging each other about just serving the Lord with gladness in this area of math. And what we'll do is just start with prayer and then move on from there. But will you pray with me? Dear Father, we're so thankful that you've brought us together through this conference. We love learning. That's why we became teachers. And we're so thankful that we can sit at your feet for a few days and hear these men and women teach us and inspire us and encourage us from your word. And I pray now, as we work together, that you'd bless our time, that we would bring out the best in each other as we reason together. We're so thankful for all that we learn about you and your glorious creation through mathematics. And we ask it in Christ's name, amen.
Amen.
Okay, so I put together that little math PowerPoint because that's how I felt about math growing up. I was that kid who didn't enjoy math class. Math concepts never came quickly or easily for me. Had to try again. And I was always just a little bit afraid going into math classes throughout grammar school and high school. I was really strong in language arts. So in college, I trained to be an English teacher, high school English teacher, because I thought, this will be great. I can read all the classics with my students. We'll do a play every spring. Math will never, ever enter into the picture. It'll be great. That was my dream. And funny thing, never did teach high school English. did teach second and third grade the whole time. You know, I got married right after college, didn't even look for a job. And but at Christmas time, one of the teachers left, so I finished a third grade year. And I thought that that was the most fun thing I had ever done, teaching third grade. Because you can sing every day, you can dance, you can act, you can play, you get to read stories. I even liked giving spelling tests. So I thought, this is great. I'm loving third grade. But there was math. There was some math in third grade. The good part was that this time I had all the answers, and I knew how to work all the problems. But I was very aware, you know, new teacher love. You're in that stage of, I really want to fulfill my calling. I really want to honor you, Lord. I want to serve you to the best of my abilities. Can you please help me with math? That's exactly where I started, just taking it in prayer to the Lord and asking him if he would form my attitude and shape it, teach me to love math and be skillful. Because, as we've heard Douglas Wilson say that today and so many others, imitation is a big part of transmitting learning from teacher to student, from transmitting the faith from teacher to student. I was just aware that I didn't want to be that teacher that just communicated so many ugly things about teaching math and the lack of enjoyment of it. So I started praying, and in my math testimony, Kitty's going to give hers in a minute, two things really shaped my thinking that helped me become so joyful about teaching math and loving math. It's one of my favorite parts of the day. One was listening to Dr. John Lennox John Lennox is a British mathematician. He's a philosopher of science. He's a Christian apologist. He has a great website if you want to check it out. He came to the Geneva School for a faculty meeting one afternoon. And while I was sitting there, one thing he said just really had such an impact on my thinking. And he said, math is a language. And I thought, well, now I'm on solid ground. Language arts, got it. Math is a language, and you want to tell the shortest story possible. It's a language of compression. And that suddenly made mathematics make so much more sense to me. And now I teach that to my class every year. The first couple of weeks of school, I'm teaching them that math is a language, and they can act it out with me. They can say, I'll say, math is a language of, and they'll say, compression. And it becomes kind of a cue that they can be more precise with the numbers and symbols that they're using and more work with more skill in mathematics. And I put an example for you up on the screen there. This is a place where I would use that language of compression. If you teach second or third grade, right before you introduce multiplication, your kids will get to this point of repeated addition. And I might draw a picture on the whiteboard of four dinner plates and then three cookies on each plate and ask, can you draw me a number sentence for that? And the number sentence on the left, that's what they'll write for me. They'll look at those four plates, see the three cookies, and they'll say 3 + 3 + 3 + 3, count it all up, it equals 12. And technically, that is a correct number sentence. But it's such a great place to say, well done you. Now, let me show you a symbol so that you can make this a shorter story. And you can introduce them to the X, or the groups of. And they're very quick to arrive at equal group story. And you can use this with repeated subtraction and division, all kinds of concepts. I found that language of compression really helped me and really helped my students. The second thing that really changed my thinking was taking a class on the role of play in child development. And I put a quote up here for you. Play enhances language development, social competence, creativity, imagination, and thinking skills. Imagination that we heard so much about this morning from Douglas Wilson. When children are little, that's how it's strengthened. They play. And if you'll put the second quote up there, would you please? Mm-hmm. Thanks. I liked this one too. Play is the chief vehicle for the development of imagination and intelligence. So we see our little children. If you're a grammar school teacher, you've seen this on the playground a million times. They will act out some of the things that they're learning in class. And it's so charming to see them working this out and experimenting. And that really influenced me to take a more playful approach in my classroom. Playful approach was much more fun for me, too. Because do we stop enjoying playtime as adults? No, we just don't need it as much. We can learn in different ways than our youngest children can. So I wanted to tell you my math testimony so that you can see two things that influenced me. And I hope that while Katie shares hers too, you'll think about how you felt about math growing up. And you'll think about whether you enjoyed it, whether concepts came easily to you, and whether or not some of the things that we're saying or doing will help you approach it with joy and your students too.
Yes, my testimony is a little different because I was born loving math and loving puzzles. And I'm one of those kids who always loved puzzles. You put a puzzle before me and I just couldn't wait to solve it and figure it out. I loved the word problems. They were a fun challenge to me, something that I delighted in. And I enjoyed manipulating the materials, the blocks and different things and solving a math problem. So I actually didn't realize that some people didn't like math. I thought math was fun, and everybody must think it's fun since I do. So it wasn't until my first year of teaching that I found out, oh my, some people really don't understand math. And so that first year was a bit frustrating for me, trying to teach first and second graders math and realizing that they didn't understand it and that it wasn't easy for everyone. And about in February, I found myself very impatient and just not knowing what to do with those students who didn't understand. And so in some ways, even though our background is really different, Mary Chris and I came to the same place in teaching where we realized, okay, math can be hard for people. And what I realized was in many ways, although it was easy for me, I was mistaught math. I was taught the algorithms. I was taught the steps to use to solve a problem, but I really didn't understand what a lot of it meant because I wasn't given adequate materials and time to play and to understand how you get to algorithms. I was just really good at memorizing those algorithms and figuring it out and doing, algebra was wonderful. I loved algebra and the codes and all of that. But I didn't really know what it meant. And so for me, it was stepping back and trying to figure out how to bring math to life for children and how to make it concrete and how to take something that's completely abstract and turn it into a story and noticing the patterns and the relationships between the numbers. And that was what I found brought it to life for my students. And as I continued in this journey of kind of rethinking math and reimagining it and figuring out how poorly I was taught math, once I ended up in a classical school, I started realizing that really, if we look at history, the ancients also thought this way. Historically, math was a playful thing, and all of those who have developed our algorithms and our principles in mathematics, they came about these through play that looks a lot like the play we see in our children. It uses imagination and problem-solving skills, just like Mrs. Rowe was saying. And so as we are thinking about math in our classical Christian schools, we can look to the ancients and realize it's okay to let our children experiment with what happens when you move the volume of water from one container to another. That is not a waste of time. It is so good for their whole body to take in and to experience what is happening when they're manipulating objects. And sometimes as teachers, I think we are tempted to skip those things. And instead, I want us to really think about how we can invite children into mathematics and into discovering algorithms and principles that the ancients did discover, and yet let them also come about those things in meaningful ways. Also, I think it's important for us to see and think about how math, in some ways, is flexible. I think we often think of math as being stuck and stagnant, but if we look at the Roman numeral system that was used many, many years ago, we look at it as an antiquated system that isn't as efficient as what we use today with the decimal system. But I just speculate and wonder if 1,000 years from now they might look at our decimal system and they will have developed another system that might be more efficient. And so I think if we can teach our children that there's still more to be discovered in math, just like there is in science and history and all of that, I think we can really honor math well and teach them in a way that glorifies God. Now, if we look again to the ancient, I like this quote, mathematics is the highest exercise to which human leisure could be devoted. Leisure and mathematics, not often put together. However, even school, the word school comes from the word schola that also is translated as leisure. And so for us to think about what it means for math to be leisurely and playful and even restful, that it can be delightful. I think that's so important. Now I'm going to go back to this quote that has impacted me greatly. And it's talking about loving contemplation. The valued manifoldness of being as human can present itself only to loving contemplation. Lovelessness, indifference will never be able to generate sufficient attention to slow down and linger intently over an object, to hold and sculpt every detail and particular in it, however minute. An indifferent or hostile reaction always impoverishes and decomposes its object. And so for me, as I've journeyed as a math teacher, I have learned that what I love, my students will learn to love. And if I can lovingly contemplate math and take what it truly is and sculpt it for my children and help them see the beauty of it, then they will see that also. Whereas if I feel indifferent or even hostile towards mathematics, then I will impoverish it and I will suck the life out of it or decompose it. So we want to now do something a little playful and ask those of you who have game cards if you would stand up and play a little game with us so that we can act out some play. This is a really fun and quick and simple game that we play with our students. It's called I Have Who Has. You maybe have played these before, but we love them. We use them to review skills. We use them just to lighten the mood when students maybe are feeling kind of down about math. So,
how about a show of hands? Has anybody played I Have Who Has before?
Yes. Oh,
love those. If you haven't been on Teachers Pay, teachers.com should really go. They have loads of these for free. Teachers Pay, teachers.com.
Would you be willing to start right here in the front? Okay, nice and loud so everyone can hear you.
I have 9. Who has this plus 3 divided by 4?
That's why you have the medicine. 9 plus 3 divided by 4.
I have 3.
Yay! Okay. Two minus two
times
six.
Three less than seven.
Is it who started?
I don't know.
What did we start with?
Who has no. Four?
Who has four?
Oh my.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you for playing. You can sit down.
You get the idea.
Yes.
Right. And that's a good reason to play games, because part of the reason we wanted to teach this class and just think it through with others is because teaching is so demanding. There are so many things to do, and you can get so bogged down and just lost in the daily grind. And one of the first things to go right out the window is any kind of playfulness that was there. And you're not going to spend your time looking online for fun games or thinking of concepts to play when you're just so brought down. So we're optimistic that today, during this class and then later in Meet Your Peers, maybe we'll have a chance to just revive and rejuvenate each other with these ideas. So one of the first things we wanted to cover is involving parents. After involving parents, we'll move on to engaging students. And this is one of our favorite cartoons. We teach math and focus, and at the second grade level, they start with bar modeling. And people who haven't been raised in that system, it has the potential to be very alienating. When your second grader brings home math that you don't know how to do, sometimes, you know, that can put you off a bit. So we try to involve our parents early. We start at open house, and we are just trying to cast a vision for them. about how to help their children with their math and model for them a really cheerful, even adventurous attitude towards it. Because just like our attitude is going to affect the children so much, parents' attitudes are going to affect the children so much. So we try to bring them on board early, and we say, hey, part of what we're going to do this year is have a parent night, because we know some of this bar modeling can be so tricky. So put this on your calendar. Come to parent night. We're going to teach you the same way we teach our students, and then you'll know exactly how to help them. Another thing we want to say to them is try to talk about math at home, especially around the dinner table. And every week we send a little home note home, and one little section is, we call it table talk. One little section, we always try and have questions to spark conversation about whatever we're doing in math that week. And we got a few examples for you here. Ask your parents how they use estimation at the grocery store. When we cover estimation, I model that for my students all the time, because whatever you model, they're going to learn it better. And we do this thing called think aloud. Everybody familiar with that? Just saying out loud what I think in my head. Because as I go down the grocery store, I'm not going to say 19 cents plus 19 cents and figure that out and pull out the tens and the ones. I'm going to think 20 twice is 40. And it's going to be that fast and moving along. And so we try and help our students see that too. This is when I use estimation. When do you use estimation? How about look around your house and find objects that are more than 1 meter long? Explain symmetry to your parents. See how many things you can find at home that are symmetrical. Play some games with that. So over the years, we've had some fun feedback from students and their children, students and their parents, about the things they've talked about at home with math. Let's see.
Another way we involve parents is giving them ideas of games and activities they can play at home, because we want to equip parents to be playful at home with math and for it not to be just a drudgery of working through a workbook or a worksheet. So we always send homework home that we are pretty certain the children are confident about and that parents could help with. And then we recommend games for them to play with their students. So here are a few ideas that we send home. We recommend that they play restaurant at dinner and make up prices for the food that their children are going to consume, and the kids get to purchase that food and practice with their money skills while eating dinner. We also teach different math card games that they could play. We're going to show you Sums of 10 Go Fish that we like to play in a little while here. That's one of them. But there's all kinds of fun card games you can do with math, even things as simple as war, where you're comparing the higher or low number, or you can do things like addition war, where each person puts down two cards and adds it together, or multiplication war, where you are finding the product and seeing who has the highest product, subtraction war, all kinds of things that are super simple for parents to do at home with cards. We always recommend at the beginning of the year, get an analog clock. Most homes no longer have analog clocks in them. It helps out so much if a child has a watch or a clock in their room for telling time. And a lot of parents haven't thought of that because they're not educators, and they think it's great their kids can tell digital time and they're done. When we study fractions, we recommend that they play with fractions with their food also, and that parents try that out where they cut. We had last year all kinds of interesting sandwiches coming to school cut in different fractions, and it was so much fun. And even had a fraction food party at school, but they can do this at home as well, where they can enjoy their food in different fractions. We also recommend, maybe you guys have heard of extramath.org. It's a great website for practicing your facts. It's free, and you can register as a parent or as a teacher. You can register all your students, and then they can practice their math facts at home and on the computer, and they think it's really fun, and well, more fun than on a worksheet.
And you can monitor their progress and print out certificates for them and recognize their achievements. It's a fun little math site.
It's fantastic. And then there are many iPad apps that I don't actually have an iPad, but Mrs. Rowe has recommended a few to parents, right?
If you teach one of the Singapore-based maths, you know, the Math in Focus or Singapore, there are great bar model apps. And then there's also a great little fact practice called Flash to Pass. I like that one too. That one's different from extramath.org. And you can check those out. But there's probably a kajillion apps out there. We've probably barely scratched the surface. I'm hoping we can talk about those things at Meet Your Peers.
This is another just handout that we give to our parents. Again, these things seem really intuitive to us as teachers, but a lot of parents are impacted by the idea of modeling a positive attitude toward math, and they will even confess things like, oh, I know sometimes I complain about the math homework, and sometimes I get frustrated. And so when we have that math night, we give them these ideas. When a problem is challenging, cheerfully encourage students to engage in the problem with a spirit of creative problem solving. Approach it as an adventure. This makes a huge difference in children's attitude if their parents are like, wow, this is an exciting problem. Let's see if we can figure it out. We also encourage, we have a no-tears math policy that we tell our parents about. We say children should not be crying over math, and if they are getting upset or frustrated at home, we recommend that they just put the math away for a little while and maybe come back to it later, or write a note to us, or start fresh in the morning before they get to school. So we talk to them about that, and also talk to them just about the routines of their evening, that they be sure they set aside plenty of time to work on math so that it can be done in a playful way rather than in a rushed, frustrated way. Also, we just kind of train our parents to give the children hints rather than always expecting the children to figure everything out themselves. If you give a child a hint and then they get to feel what it feels like to solve the problem, then they can celebrate and feel that satisfaction. And we help our parents think about the language they're using rather than saying, you're such a good math student, or you're so great at math. We really talk to them and say, you know, how about saying, you're a good problem solver. You stuck with that. You didn't give up, and I'm so proud of you for not giving up. Because that focuses on the character and helps develop the virtues of perseverance and things like that that we really want in all of our students, rather than defining whether you're good or bad at something.
So these are all, you advance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we hope you get the idea that we're just trying to paint a picture for the parents so that they can envision what they're doing or cast that vision, because so many of them, they didn't have a classical education growing up. They weren't educated in these Singapore-based math programs. And as much as we can do that positively and early, I think that's really helpful for our parents.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we want to move on to ways we engage our students also. And a lot of this starts the very beginning of the year. Even before we open a math book, we've been influenced a lot by Jamie Smith, Desiring the Kingdom, and some of his writing, and David Smith at Calvin College also, and just the ideas of creating a classroom culture and using habits and liturgies that will develop the character and the environment and culture that we want. And so even at the beginning of the year, our goal is to create a culture where students are willing to be vulnerable and take risks, and they're willing to engage in this playfulness with a vulnerability that would allow them to make mistakes and to not be right all the time, or to know if they can't figure it out right away, it's okay. And so there are lots of little things that we do, even before we start math, to help create a classroom that is caring and kind. And I won't tell you all those right now, but I think it's a good thing as a teacher to think about at the beginning of the year how you can support your students in this way. And just start to train that disposition in their heart that they would be students who are willing to keep going even when things get hard, and that they're not going to give up right away, and that they know they're supported, that no one's going to laugh at them or make fun of them. And also, as you're teaching your math lessons, David Smith came and talked at our school at the end of the year this year, and he has a website called whatiflearning.com. It's a fantastic site that really talks about how you can intentionally and thoughtfully teach virtue as you are teaching an academic subject and through your lesson plans. And so there are several examples that you can look through, and he talks about in math class particularly it being a time when you can love your neighbor, because if you're really good at something, you can help them out and give hints. And if you're creating a culture where students know they get to love their neighbor, then everyone can learn in a more cheerful way. Also, it's a time to develop perseverance, as I already said. And so you might want to look at that. I was very inspired by him and that website, and you might also be. So Mrs. Rowe is going to share with you some daily rituals.
Sure. So we thought we'd talk with some pretty concrete examples of how we try and foster these virtues, and not only in our children, in ourselves. You know, the teacher needs perseverance too sometimes. Mm-hmm. One thing for us is that these tasks and also procedures, the way that we perform them, that they don't take away from the momentum that we've been building this whole time. We want everything to move in that direction that's leading towards things that are good and true and beautiful. So one thing we'll do with time tests is pretty simply model it. I mean, do you ever take a time test with your kids and show them how you do it? They love it. And especially this year, I tried to show them how often I try and increase my score. And I would keep track of it, and I would say what my goal was. And so they would set their own goals. But if you never take time tests with your kids, try it out. They just love it. And when we take our time tests, it's just one of the most game-like approaches that we take. You know, some people, if they approach a time test, it's an instant stomach ache. And especially at second grade, that is really sad. Mm-hmm. So if we can make it, you know, playful, make it more like a game, that's really going to strengthen them, help them face it with joy. When we take the time test, when we finish, we let the students grade it in class. And everybody has a different way of grading it, but you should find a way to grading it that gets them to practice the skill again and is kind of fun. So I know when I grade it, I like to sing it. I sing the problem and the answer, and they sing the answer. So I'll model that for you here. I would do this. 3 + 5 = 8. And the children would say, 8. 2 × 5 = 10. 10. 11 - 4 = 7. 7. 9 - 8 = 1. 1. Okay, so that is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You can use any tune that has a little echo behind it if you want your students to sing the answers. And I put different kinds of problems up there so that you can see it works with addition, multiplication, and subtraction. I have not found it to be successful with division. It's just too many syllables. And sometimes I make up tunes, but I love music. And another thing I wanted to show you is that you can adapt this to practice different skills, like rhyming words at our level. That's still important. And so sometimes, instead of giving the number, I'll give a rhyming word, or I'll say the number and they give a rhyming word. So it would be something like this. 3 + 5 = great.
8.
Uh-huh. And if I say 2 × 5 = 10, you might say 10 or men or something like that. Oh my, that's just really big fun. So, but you do time tests a little differently. Do you want to share that?
Yeah, I mean, my method, I'm not as much of a singer. I sing some, but I'm not going to sing in front of you. But but I also grade it in class, and I have the student of the day come up, and they get to read the answers, and we pretend like it's a little typewriter, and so we go down the rows and just say the answers, and then the whole class goes, cha-ching, row two. And so thinking of fun, playful ways, though, even to grade your papers, engages the students and gets them excited about math facts, and they associate it with fun and playfulness rather than drudgery. Mm-hmm. So being thoughtful about that.
Mm-hmm. So time tests, that's something we do daily. Something else that we like to try and do is rehearse vocabulary and math concepts. So we do use music for transitions, like let's do a skip count song while you guys all sit on the rug, or let's sing the estimation song while you get your math books out, things like that to keep the transitions pretty tight. We also do have, oh, I'm not ready.
Oh, sorry.
But another time, just to practice the vocabulary and the math concepts, we just bring out a song. There's so many great ones on the web. There's so many great ones we've gotten from other teachers in classical schools. And every now and then, we write one ourselves. So let me show the estimation song now. Okay. This year, I thought we should have an estimation song. We were doing rounding. I thought we need a rounding song, something to help them remember when they round up and when they round down. So I searched the web, couldn't find anything I really liked, sat down one night and wrote an email to Katie and Ruth and said, this is what I have. I think we need a song. By the way, can you put a tune to it too? So I sent it to them, and Katie picked it up. And I don't know how long it even took you, but she thought, let's not just have a song where we practice how we round or how we estimate. Let's practice the vocabulary. Let's make sure the word is in there. And she put it to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Way to go.
It's my favorite.
Miss Gerber.
It's real easy.
I tell you that just to say, just like we want our students to feel that they can be vulnerable and take some chances with things that they do, we should do that too as teachers. We can take a chance with colleagues that we trust who will not laugh us down if we say, I'm trying to write a song about estimation. Can you please help? Help each other with songs and then pull it together and share that with the kids too, because I think they really enjoy knowing who wrote what songs and when and all that. So this is our estimation song. I will sing it. I mean, do you think?
Sing okay, it for right. us. Okay. You can join in.
Estimation, estimation, rounding up and rounding down. 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9. Rounding up will be just fine. You have to repeat it. 4, 3, 2, or 1. Round it down and then you're done. Estimation, estimation, rounding up and rounding down. And so you can see, even as they're seeing it, sometimes I'll put a 2-digit or 3-digit number up on the board and circle that last number. And when we sing 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9, you know, hold your hands up in a question. We're going to round it up or round it down. So we can do that while they're practicing this song. Mm-hmm. But we love songs for transitions. We love it for cues. We love it for practicing vocabulary. I think some people even just chant the vocabulary and mm-hmm. the definitions, right?
They do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Talk about games and centers?
Sure. Let's move on and talk about a few ways to engage students. Some of our favorite ways with centers and games. We have literacy centers at our level, second grade, and since math is a language, we feel free to put math practice and all kinds of exploratory math games in a literacy center. One of our favorites is in the beginning of the year when we're working on place value. You know, you can give a child a number and you can ask them to compare. But hey, how fun is it to roll dice? You know, roll the dice 3 times. Make the biggest 3-digit number you can make. Write it down. And then let your buddy do it. See who gets the biggest number. That person gets a point. Turn things into games so that they get more practice time on their math skills. I think we call that Roll-a-Rama, right, Ms.
We do.
That's
Roll-a-Rama.
Sometimes just putting out something on a table for them to experiment with. Ms. Ferber, you actually remember playing with a balance scale as a child, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you put the objects out, put out the balance scale, put out the place value blocks, sometimes they'll surprise you with what they'll discover, like the fraction stacks. That was new for us this year. And they got busy with a little bit of direction figuring out which fractions equaled 1/2. So, again, it's back to that. If they play, sometimes they experiment and discover these things for themselves. Mm-hmm. We like to have a calendar center. I wrote most of them this year, and someday they're going to be on teacherspayteachers.com. I'll put some of them up there for free, too. But all kinds of things that you wish kids knew about the month that they can do independently. We'll put it on the information on a center board. Why is it called February? What's the history of that word? What's the flower of the month? What's the jewel of the month? And what about the holidays in the month? Hey, how many Thursdays are there in the month? What is the date of the second Saturday? You know, all those fun things that we usually do out loud with our youngest children to practice? Try them at a center. If they're with a buddy, they can help each other and figure it out and strengthen each other that way. My goodness, they learn to work together well. Mm-hmm. And then we like to put money games there. Do you want to say something about money games or...
Yeah, I mean, we have a couple different games where we'll have little containers with money in it, and students get to solve how much is in each container. We you have a mystery amount of money where one student gets to pick some coins and put it in their hand and tell how many coins and what the value is, and the other student tries to figure out what coins the first student has. So little just playful things like that that are really simple. They don't take a lot of work. Our students do bring in their own money at the beginning of the year in a little container. They bring 6 quarters, 6 dimes, 6 nickels, and 20 pennies. So all year long, we can ask them to pull that money out and use it at a center. It's a really easy way to involve money.
One of the money games, I guess it's not truly a money game, but it is a literacy center, is just putting up the history of the dollar bills and the coins. Yeah. Like, can you identify which president goes with which and why and when? And what are these symbols that you find on our money? They love playing with money, these kids. We thought we'd teach you how to play math headbands. Has anybody ever played math headbands? How about that fun headbands game that little kids love? It's where everybody has a card on their forehead, and they have to ask questions to figure out what the card is. Okay, math headbands is a lot like that. So we need a volunteer, but you don't have to do anything silly. We'll do it. Will you help us? You be a referee? If you're going to play math headbands, you have a deck of cards, and you take out the face cards. No kings, queens, jacks. Come on over here. What's your name?
Kathleen.
Thanks, Kathleen, for helping us out. And you need 3 people, at least, to play this game. Well, 3 people, really, is it. And so what the children do is they each take a card, and you establish before you start if it's addition, and we're going to do addition. So we're going to put these cards on our forehead, and you tell us the sum. And then I look at her card, and I try and figure out what my card is. She looks at my card, and she tries to figure out what her card is. And the one who's the fastest gets to keep the cards. And the one with the most cards at the end gets to win. Can you be the referee?
Yes.
Okay. You ready?
Ready.
You have to say go.
Go. 13.
8.
5.
Oh.
So you get my card.
Get her card. Yeah. Do you get the idea? Okay. But, should we do it again? What do you think?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Still addition.
It's, Well, I'll tell you what. Look at it and see. Can we do subtraction?
You can do subtraction.
Okay. All right. Subtraction. Ready.
Go. 2.
2.
0.
What?
Subtraction. Oh, subtraction. Do you see what I mean? I can't change gears that fast, but you get the idea. Thank you, Kathleen. Really good, fun little game for kids to play. They have a good time with it. Yeah, we should do. Do you want to do Go Fish and Secret Codes?
Oh, sure. You want me to tell about those?
Sure.
Okay. Another center we have is a math secret code, and we study ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics, so we're talking about codes a lot through the year. And so the math code we put at a center where it's just A is 1, B is 2, right? Something like that. It's a really simple code. But the kids get to solve mystery riddles, and we put out different words and things like that, and they get to solve and figure out what the word is based on the little secret code. And they love it. It's very playful.
And then, you know, the next week you can change it, and you can say, what is the value of this word?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if every letter has a number value, and you write out, let's say, the word love, they have to add it up and figure out the value. I'm going to figure out how to do fractions with it, too, but haven't done that yet. But you get the idea with secret codes.
And then Sums of 10 Go Fish is just a fun way to work on those sums of 10 for the lower school or the lower math in kindergarten, first and second, where just like Go Fish, if I have cards in my hand and if I have a 6, I'm going to ask my buddy for a 4. I'm going to say, do you have a 4, so that then I can try and make sums of 10. So it's a fun way to practice that, and we love it, and the kids enjoy it also.
Mm-hmm.
So next, I just wanted to go over a few more ways that we attempt to cultivate joy in our math class. Another little game we play as a whole class, not so much as a center, but I play it probably 3 times a week. It's very quick. It's called Math Blast Off, and you get your children in 2 lines. And it goes, you have the flashcards, and you hold them up, and whatever you're doing, you can do, you know, obviously addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, anything. And the two students in front try to say the correct answer first, and whoever gets it right takes the other student to the back of their line. And so one line might get longer, And it goes really fast. I just keep on moving those cards, and kids better keep moving forward because they know they'll lose if they don't move along. And then whenever both lines turn into one long line, I say, 3, 2, 1, blast off. And they get to kind of zoom around the room. And, of course, I've trained them how to do this in a very controlled, spirited, lovely way so that nobody gets hurt. And then they zoom to their seats. And at that point, they know. They right away get out their pencil and colored pencil. And I sing a little song that I have for passing out papers. And we pass out papers, and we do that timed practice. And it goes really fast. So that's just a fun way, again, to get math. That's how I start my math class often, and they love it. They're like, are we going to play blast off? Are we going to play blast off? I'm like, okay. Another way we try to cultivate joy is through books, and there are so many literature books out there that go along with math and whatever you're studying. We have one for nearly every math chapter we do. We also connect it even with our history. We get to read a book called Senefer that goes with our ancient Egyptian history, and it's about a little boy, a little Egyptian boy, and how much he loved math, and the kids really take to that and see him almost as a hero, and they want to be like Senefer and be really good at calculating and thinking and doing mental math. So just bringing in literature and story again in creative ways. We also just want to promote that creative thinking through riddles. And every day before recess, we give our students a riddle of the day. And it's not necessarily a math riddle, but it helps them think, you know, creatively. And they get to think about that riddle at recess, and if they want to tell us the answer, they come up to us and just whisper the answer to us, and then they get a little eraser out of the eraser box, and it's a big deal and very exciting. So again, just to promote thinking in general.
Now, we should mention.
Yes.
You only get 3 guesses on the riddle.
True.
I would recommend a limit. Because if you don't, and then you also have to make your guess before the bell rings. No more guessing after the bell rings.
That's so right.
It's only 2 things. I just want to put that out there.
Oh, boy.
I can think of a Hink Pink.
Oh, those are fun. Okay.
Do you guys know Hink Pink or Hinky Pinky? Those are so fun. A Hink Pink is a riddle with, and the answer has 2 words, and each word is 1 syllable. So a Hinky Pinky is a riddle with 2 word answer, and each word is 2 syllables. Okay, so a Hinkity Pinkity would be 3 syllables, and on it goes. So, but at our level, it's pretty much Hink Pinks. So a Hink Pink. Let me do a Hinky Pinky. The riddle would be Silly Rabbit. And the answer would be 2 words. Okay, Funny Bunny.
Good
right.
job.
And it's fun because they rhyme too, but usually the riddles are much more, they're a little more elaborate than that. Like, that's super easy right before Easter. But I'm trying to think of a, we should have brought an example.
I know, we should have. Oh. Sorry.
Send us an email. We'll send you an example riddle.
Another thing we do with word problems, we find that sometimes word problems have to do with reading comprehension struggles, too, where they just don't understand what's going on in the story. So we will let kids get up and act them out, and even, to make it even more fun, give them props or a costume to wear. And it's so simple, you know, really small, but it brings such delight to young children. Also, if things are getting a little dry in math class, we get out the dry erase markers, and instead of writing on our mini whiteboards, we just write on the desks. And kids also take great pleasure in writing on their desk with those, and they think it's so exciting and beg for it. And so it's kind of a special thing, but you can write on them, and it wipes off, and it's really no big deal.
It's good to do right before a holiday when you were going to scrub the desks anyway. Yeah. It comes right off, and they think it's such a privilege.
Mm-hmm. The math medicine you received today is, we don't give it out for math every day, but we do give it out for our math tests. And so one of the things that several years ago we started rethinking was ways to help children feel delight over things that they might not normally feel delight over. And math tests are one of those things that sometimes can cause people to feel stressed and anxious. And we all know that it is also good. It kind of stimulates their brain to get their mouths moving and that sort of thing. But it also brings them great pleasure to get to chew a piece of gum. And so usually after the first math test, students are begging for the next math test. When's the next math test? When's the next math test? And it's just a way to really help them feel pleasure over even taking a math test.
And we frequently have parents who want to send in the math medicine. They are happy to purchase that and send that in because they like the effect it has on their children. Because more and more children, like especially you this year, you had several, they just thought math test time was like fun puzzle solving time. Mm-hmm. Some of them really will delight in it. Mm-hmm. Did you have a question? We usually only get sugar-free gum. And then when we have allergies, those children bring in their own little stash. Mm-hmm. And then I had two this year where they also had the option of just going to my little treasure box and getting a little treasure if mm-hmm. Because they had severe allergies, and if mom hasn't read the label, they don't need it. Mm-hmm. So we just work it out that way.
Or you can use, I had some with braces this year. You can use mints or something else right. like that. I would give them a mint. Mm-hmm. They were happy with that too. And then another thing we did years ago was we thought we wanted a little prayer before we take our tests. And so Mrs. Rowe wrote a little testing song for us.
Oh, right. I would encourage you to have a little testing song. It's such a nice little signal for we are taking our test now. There's no talking when it's finished. And since at this level they're really, second grade especially, they're still learning to take tests. So we sing this song after the offices are up and everybody's prepped and ready. And, okay, I will sing this song. Now as we begin our test, help us, Lord, to do our best. In all things we say or do, may we all depend on you. May we all depend on you. Amen. So that's our song. It's very... if any of you can make the prose a little better.
Oh,
oh my goodness. Only if you promise this is not going to be on YouTube. Okay. All right. Let me pitch it a little lower, too.
Oh, we have a question.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What is the song I sing? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. Mine are always like the tune for the testing song is
like I can't sing this. Like take the paper, pass it down.
Oh yeah, take the paper and pass it down, pass it down, pass it down. Mine is take the paper and pass it down the lane or whatever. Take the paper and pass it to your neighbor, something like that.
A lot
that.
Of these come very spontaneously. They just happen sometimes. And so...
Yeah, and they always change.
We have the write your name and your date on your paper one that
That's right.
gets stuck in our head. So
That's right. But
it just happens.
See us later if you want some of our songs. Our emails are at the top of that booklet, and we'd be happy to share, especially if you improve upon them. You can share right back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are we moving on? You're not doing a repeat.
Did you seriously want a repeat? Okay, all right. Oh, my goodness. All right. My singing debut at the ACCS conference. Okay. Now as we begin our test, help us, Lord, to do our best. In all things we say or do, may we all depend on you. May we all depend on you. Amen. Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, we're going to move on to kind of our final topic here. One of the other things we decided to do years ago was to have this amazing math race field trip. And this is just one idea of a field trip that might connect to math and continue to promote joy. And so what we do is we go to a small mall that is not very highly populated, and we give the students about 12 clues that are in a little packet, and they have the supplies needed and any money that they would need to purchase the items that we've asked them to go purchase. And they get to use their math skills and the concepts that they've learned so far that year to solve the clues with their team and to work out different problems. And so it uses all kinds of skills. And one of our policy is that if we're going to go into a store, they will buy something because we want to have good manners and, you know, be kind to the people at the mall. And we it's a great place even to teach manners and how to purchase items, what to do with receipts. And parents absolutely love this field trip. We usually have at least two parents per team, and they enjoy it and really see how the kids are learning math and getting to see how it's applicable in the real world. So this is a picture of some students that got to solve this clue. They went to the Dollar Tree and bought a bag of Starlight Mints. And, of course, they got to see that it wasn't just a dollar, that it actually had tax, and so they got to kind of look at what tax is. And then before they opened the bag, they got to practice their estimation skills, and all of the students got to estimate how many mints they thought were in the bag. And then they opened the bag and they put the mints in groups of three. So it was practicing their equal group skill and their skip counting by threes, which we were doing in second grade. Then they got to see who had the closest estimate and enjoy that, and then we had a supply of mints for the rest of the year to use for various fun things. This is another darling picture. You can see very joyful students with big smiley faces there. This is another clue where they practiced money skills, going and buying something at the Smoothie Bee, and then dividing the chips up and using their division skills and finding out how many chips there were in all. So, and then they also got to have some bonus problems on some of those. They got to find out how much two bags of chips would cost, and even think about remainders, if they were dividing these chips up equally and some were left over. And we don't do a lot with long division or remainders, but this is a great opportunity for them to practice those skills. We have lots of other clues. They get to go and practice counting out money to make a wish in the wishing well and to get bubble gum and all kinds of fun things like that.
Yeah, my favorite.
What is your favorite?
One of my all-time favorite memories of this math race was the wishing well clue.
So cute.
Where you had to count out a certain amount of money. And we do this early in the year, so they're not dealing with huge amounts of money. It might have been less than 10 cents. But the two boys went to the wishing well, and so they stood there and they made this wish. One little boy was so precious, and he said, "I wish the Holy Spirit would come more and more into my life." And he threw his money in. And I was like, "Oh my goodness, that's so precious." And the boy next to him goes, "I want to be a superhero." And he goes running off. I've just never forgotten the contrast there.
So cute. So we just wanted to close with this quote. Did you want to thoughts about this quote?
Sure. I loved this quote too. It meant so much to me because I thought, oh, too much of my life, I was indifferent or even afraid or hostile towards this subject. And I never failed. I was never a complete failure. So, of course, my teacher probably had no idea what was going on inside. She's certainly not to blame. But I did see how, as an adult, when I began to lovingly contemplate this subject and take it in prayer, that God was faithful to answer his prayer, but it also enabled me to hold it up like that diamond and consider it and sculpt it and turn it into something beautiful that I really pray honors a great God who made these things. Mm-hmm. So I present this quote to you again, and we'll close with that. And we'd love to get to know you better at Meet the Peers, which starts in just a little while. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.